नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
satisfaction. Through the manifestations of the air as bodily warmth, vitality, mental power, physical strength, endeavor and movement. Disham tvam avakasho si disha kam spota asvayaha nado varnas tamom kala Apitinam Pitakitihi. You are the directions and their accommodating capacity. How many directions are there?
Six.
Do you know that?
No.
It's just a speculation.
Yeah, well, it's north, south, east, west, up and down.
North, south, east, west.
Up and down.
There's 10 directions. I think there's more than north, south, east, and west. You can add in south, south, west, etc. But, ten directions. The overlaying ether and the elemental, and so it's interesting here, you have directions and their accommodating capacity, which means space, basically. The overlaying ether is what we call space. And the elemental sound residing within it. You are the primeval, unmanifested form of sound, the first syllable on, and audible speech, by which sound, as words, acquires particular references. Purport. In accordance with the general process of creation, speech always becomes audible in stages. Which proceed from subtle inner impulse to outward expression. These stages are mentioned in the mantras of the Rig Veda. 164-45. Chakvaripa Pamimita Padani Tani Vidu Brahmanaye Manishinaha Guhayam Tri Ni Nihitani Nengayanti Tuliyam Bhajo Manushya Vadanti. Discriminating Brahmanas know of four progressive stages of language. Three of these remain hidden within the heart as imperceptible vibrations, while the fourth stage is what people ordinarily understand as speech. What does that mean? Om Mahyatimidandasya Vimanjana Shadataya Chakshurun Nivitam Jena Tasmahe Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Vistam Sthapitam Jena Puttale Swayarupakaya Mahayam Vidakti Svaparam Kitam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Amitam Khayate Girim Yakripatamaham Bande Shri Gurum Tinatanam. So, in this section of the Bhagavatam, Vasudeva is appreciating Krishna's position as the Ishvara, the the cause of all causes. It's like Lord Brahma says, Ishvaraha Parama Krishna. Krishna is the supreme controller. Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha. He has a form, Vigraha, which is made up of spiritual potency, spiritual energies. It's called a spiritual form. It's eternal, Sat, Chit, full of knowledge, and Ananda, always blissful. Sat, Chit, Ananda, Vigraha, Anadi, Adi, Govinda. He is the beginning, but he himself has no beginning, which makes him eternal. Anadi, Adi, Govinda. Sarva, Karana, Karanam. He is the cause of all causes. The cause of all causes. He That means that he's the source of everything. Everything is contained within him, and everything comes from him, and then is manifested variously throughout the whole creation. Parashya Shakti Vibhati Sruti Devaka consciousness. From this verse of Tara Upanishad, he explains how he has multifarious potencies, and those different potencies manifest by his desire, by his wish. He doesn't think about doing things, they happen automatically. Prabhupada gives an example, a very simple example, actually Prabhupada says it's a crude example, of Mr. Ford, Albert Ford, you know, who's famous for inventing the modern day assembly line, right, to improve efficiencies. Albert Ford, he was making motor cars. Right? So he's credited with coming up with the idea. So, Prabhupada says, he gives an example that Mr. Ford's factory is known to him. He built the factory. He set up the assembly line. He employs the workers. He pays them their wage. So he's familiar with all of the goings on in the factory. And the factory is an extension of his potencies, or his energy, if you like. You know, it's all created according to his plan. And people in the factory work according to his direction. Right. No problem, this is a crude example. But it's a good example. That the material creation is also similar, in that it's created by Krishna. It works according to Krishna's plan. It comes from him. It's his. It belongs to him. Of course, he allows different living entities, just like Mr. Ford himself doesn't actually, you know, sit on the shop floor and make sure that everything happens. He has his foreman and his supervisors, and they're doing all the work for him. He sits in his office and observes everything going on. So he himself doesn't have to work in the factory. So similarly also, Krishna doesn't have to work in the material world, but he oversees it. In his form of Vishnu, you know, the Vishnu forms are like God at the office. He actually likes to play in Vrindavan and have fun with his friends. He doesn't like the idea of work at all, really, if you think about it. So he leaves that up to others to look after. So he's the Sarva Karana Karana, he's the cause of everything. From the 8th, 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 10.8. Krishna says, I'm the source of everything. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with love and devotion. So Krishna provides the ingredients, provides the facilities. All of that facility is coming from him. And he's aware of it, he's conscious of what's going on. Although he may not necessarily personally deal with it. The construction of the universe is actually coordinated by his servants, just as the factory is managed by Mr. Ford's supervisor and managers. And so therefore, you know, we have Lord Brahma and the different demigods. They're in charge of different facilities, the blowing of the wind, the shining of the sun, all of these different features are all manifest, if you like, or implemented by the demigods. But the demigods are more or less like, they're like the engineers, if you like. They do the organisation, the manipulation and the facilitation. But the ingredients are all coming from Krishna through his expansions, ultimately through Mahavishnu. And in fact, that's what Vasudeva is saying here. You know, you are the original Mahavishnu. You're the source of the creation. And, you know, just as the workers work according to the plan, so similarly also the demigods work according to the plan, which is provided by Krishna. He's the architect, if you like, or the designer. You know, there's a debate in academic circles at the moment whether evolution is the explanation for all of the variety that we see within the creation, or whether it all came about as a result of the fact that there's a designer behind everything. If life is a result of random events taking place, then the argument goes that it is far too complex. It's far too complex. The just one cell alone is far too complex for it to have come about as a result of multiple random happenings. Is the argument. And of course we would say, well yes, that's a fact. It comes about as a result of the fact that there is a blueprint, there is a plan for the creation, there's a plan for us, there's a reason for our, there's a purpose for us within it. So Vasudeva is very clear about this point. He's very clear about who is the source of creation and how the creation is manifest. And he's describing it here. His consciousness is clear. The nature of a devotee is to have very clear consciousness, clear understanding of things as they are. That's why we study the Bhagavad Gita as it is. If you want to know what's going on in the creation, then we take our authority, or we take our information from an authority. We don't create it ourselves. No need to, really. So, Vasudeva has this very clear consciousness. Prabhupada explains actually that the consciousness of the living entity before we come into the material world is clear. There's a mention here of water upon Tarpranam, Prananam, Apam. Bhumira Polnalo Vayu. One of the different elements. And this is, Vasudeva is actually describing the distribution of all the material elements in these verses, which are summarized very, very briefly in the Bhagavad Gita. We find in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find the expansion of these descriptions of how all of these different features manifest from the subtle, or even from less than the subtle, from unmanifest state to a subtle state, and then eventually into some physical state. So Vasudeva is very clear on his consciousness is clear. It's like the living entity in our original condition, our consciousness is clear. Prabhupada gives the example of the water falling out of the sky from the clouds, and initially it's clear and pure, but then when it falls and hits the ground, then the pure consciousness of the clarity of the water is covered over by the dirt that it falls into. So what do you get? You get mud. And you know, there's that saying, it's as clear as mud to me. So the consciousness of the interesting thing is, the consciousness of the living entity is still contained in that, the water is still contained within the dirt, if you like. So the clear water is still there, it's just covered over. But similarly also, the consciousness of the living entity is still present, just contaminated somewhat, or more than somewhat, by the association with the material energy. When we have a pure devotee like Vasudev presenting himself before Krishna, appreciating Krishna's personality and the features of his creation, and he's very clear in his understanding. So he's a very good example of a devotee in Krishna consciousness who very clearly understands the purpose of everything, the structure of the creation, and how it's all being manifest. He understands that very clearly. And we need to understand these details also. People will have questions. People want to know. And how is the creation manifest? What does it mean? And you know, in this day and age, people have all sorts of crazy ideas as to what's going on. You know, last week I said that I don't bump into many of my buddies. But this week I happened to have a gentleman ring up on the phone. And he said, "Oh, how's it going, mate?" Fairly young fellow. And he said, "I wondered if you could translate something into Sanskrit for me." I probably can't, but I might know somebody who can. And he asked me to translate. Let's see if I can get this thing on. I left my stylus at home, which is a bit. Oh, not actually, no. I was going to sleep on it. I just want to tell you what it was that he wanted translated. And what I told him. Eventually he told me, "It's probably okay if you don't translate it for me." Actually he rang me up and he said, "No, hurry, I've already got it translated." But it's an example of the kind of confusion that passes for spiritual life out there. Come on. Just now, I'm going to do it. Here we go. Okay. Each moment fully perceived. No, I can't. It's a little mistake to leave my here it is. This is what he wanted me to translate. Each moment fully perceived contains eternity. I said, "What does that mean?" So that sounds like a pretty bogus statement to me. Which he didn't like. Each moment fully perceived contains eternity. I said, "How is that possible? How is that possible?" You know, a moment is called a lava. Lava means a letter for the second, so it's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. Right? And eternity doesn't have a beginning, doesn't have a middle, and doesn't have an end. So a moment cannot possibly be eternity. Right? Well, he said, "No, that's not what I mean. That's not what we mean."
I said, what do you mean? And he said, it's like, you know, the Atma is the Brahman. Oh, really, is it? The Atma is the Brahman. So yes, well, that's true. The Atma is the Brahman. In one sense, yes. But I gave the example. I said, well, just like you can take a drop of water out of the ocean, right? And you can say this is the ocean because yes, it is a drop of water that's come out of the ocean. I said the drop of water is not the ocean. You can take bath in the ocean, but you can't take bath in a drop of water. And of course, Prabhupada's example is that the drop of water is wet, it's liquid, and it's salty. So it's the same in quality. Right? The drop of water is the same in quality as the ocean, but it is not the ocean in quantity. So yes, you can understand time, if you like, from one moment. You have some understanding of what time actually is for one moment, but you can never understand eternity just by looking at one particular moment in time. So, you know, it's like, my explanation was, Anu means very, very small, that's us. And God is Vibhu, which means very, 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 very big. Too big. And a little fellow can never be the big fellow, as much as he might like to think he is. The little fellow is Anu, very, very, very small. Where's the breakout class? By 23. How are we going to do that? Yeah, I didn't get that.
The sweet glasses that are there.
Oh, good. Maybe I could have a little bit of the sweet glass. Who hasn't broken their ecology fast? Should have some Mahaprasadam. Just pass it around quickly. Just do it. Oh, I feel like a baby. it's not proper to eat in front of the deities. Could you do me a favour? Just go and get a puri. Because then we can break it up into little bits and we can easily throw a puri. That's too messy. It's like baby food. That's messy.
We have the same thing.
Quick. Yeah, grab a puri, then give the devotees who didn't have break their fast a puri, a little bit of a puri each. And it's interesting, you know, when I mentioned this point about the Anu and the Vibhu, and the Anu being a small part of the Vibhu, you know what he said? He said, yeah, like a part and parcel. Then I thought, must have read Prabhupada's books. Right? Because Mamai Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhutta Sanataha Mana Shastan Indriyani Prakriti Stan Karasati. Krishna mentions in the 15th chapter that every living entity is my part and parcel. So we're coming from Krishna. You know, in one sense, you know, Prabhupada mentions this in the second canon of Bhagavatam, that we can know God and His qualities or His characteristics by studying our personality, ourselves. We can know in part. Because, you know, He's a person and we are persons. And so we have personality, potency, character, if you like, as He does. So we can understand something about the personality of Godhead by looking at ourselves. But that doesn't mean that we are God. But this is a confusion. You know, this is the kind of confusion that exists out in the world. And this young fellow was thinking that he was highly spiritual because he had this wonderful, you know, a moment fully perceived. I can't remember what it was that he said.
Contains eternity.
I told him, I said, you've got to be careful who you associate with, because you know people will fill your head with all sorts of stuff. Can I have a bit of that? That was the whole. Thank you. So, we see with somebody like Vasudeva, there's no confusion about who he is and who is the source and what his relationship with. He's very, very clear about these things. But this made me realise there are all sorts of philosophies and all sorts of there was a song that the Beatles put out as my favourite quotation on this particular point, called "I Am the Walrus." It's a spoof, actually. But in that, there's some lines of where John Lennon says, "I am you, and you are me, and we are all together." So, I said this to him, I said, "Look, I'm not you, and you're not me." Because this is philosophy, you know, we're all God. He thought that was pretty wonderful. To have come to that realization, you know, that understanding a moment means you understand eternity, he thought that was a really spiritual thing. That's why he wanted me to translate it into Sanskrit, so he could show his friends. And you know, Atma is Brahman. So this is really dangerous stuff. I'm not you, and you are not me, and we are not all together. Then I was explaining Prabhupada's point about being together. Being all together, or being one, means not that we all, you know, somehow or other just all sort of get squashed together into some homogenous, you know, nothingness or whatever it might be. But rather, if we become one, we become one in purpose. And we become one in purpose in harmony with or coalescing with Krishna. Because, you know, I guess it must be appealing. I think it appealed to me at one stage when I thought, yeah, I'm God. Finally, I realized that I'm God. How come it took me so long to realize that I'm God? Of course, it became clear to me that I wasn't God after some time. You know, like Prabhupada says, you're God, how come you get the toothache and you have to go to the dentist? Or, you know, you're speaking and then all of a sudden you've got diarrhea and you have to go to the bathroom. What kind of a God are you? So this oneness, if you like, comes about with a proper understanding of things. Not that I have become you and you have become me, but rather we are one because our purpose is the same. That we are working in cooperation with each other. That's oneness. That's the oneness that's described in them. And of course, Prabhupada gives the example of the fingers on the hand. All the fingers on our hands have identity. Thumb, forefinger, middle finger, ring finger, little finger, or index finger, whatever. They all have their identity. But they all come together as one when they act as a hand, pick up something. So in that sense, then they're all one. They still have their identity, individuality, but they all work together. So, we need to understand these are fairly simple principles that need to be understood and put into practice by the devotees, as Vasudeva is. It's founding a very technical description of Krishna's manifestation of the creation. And in fact, we should understand that too, at least in the basics. You know, the material creation is manifest. Bhumirapo nalo vayu kamano buddhire vachat ahankaramiti yame vina prakriti astada. that much we should know. And then, of course, from those gross material elements, basically, they're the gross manifestation. There's the subtle manifestation of those things, as it's mentioned here in this purport that we read. There are four manifestations of sound. Can anybody remember what they were? I asked you in the beginning, what does that mean, and nobody said anything, so that's perhaps this might be stretching things a little bit. Yeah? Sorry?
The fourth was speech.
The fourth was speech, yes, Buck. The combination of sounds that makes words and that manifests in speech that means something. Right? The manifestation of words that mean something, not gobbledygook, like, you know, I'm you and you are me, and we are all together. Because then he says after that, see how we fly like pigs in the sky. Because we got off into craziness, basically. So, you know, I was just thinking about, you know, that a moment fully perceived contains eternity. See, this is gobbledygook. Sounds like it means something. That just means nothing. So, there's the unmanifested form of sound. Just as there is the unmanifested form of the whole material creation. It's there in essence, in concept, contained within Mahavishnu. The whole of the material creation is all contained within the body of Mahavishnu. So in that sense, it exists in its original state, but it is not manifest. It only comes out when he breathes out and all of the universe has come out. And all of the material elements, then they come out. Then there's the syllables. There's all of the syllables of sound, all of the... It's interesting, you know, if you sit outside in nature on what's apparently a quiet day, but actually if you listen carefully, actually it's very noisy when you think about it. Just sitting still is actually quite noisy. You can hear your heart beating. You ever notice that? Very quiet. Well, sometimes I know that I've got my leg lying over the edge of the bed, but then my foot's going like this. So there's always something going on within the creation. There's a sound of just being. It actually has a sound. Then there are the syllables. Because the first syllable is the om, omkar. But there are many, many syllables. This is another manifestation of the sound, and then the sound comes out in the form of speech, which is very important for us. You know, very important for the devotees. Speech. It's essential. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains the austerity of speech. One should speak sweetly for the benefit of others. Krishna also mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, we shouldn't disturb the minds of the ignorant. Interestingly enough. And Prabhupada mentions you can speak in a firm and stern way to your students, if you like. The reason why I mention this is because I was looking at an article that was written by a devotee called Keshava Krishna. I don't know Keshava Krishna at all, but his article, I put a link to it on our website. And it was a very interesting article because he was making the point that devotees have to be very careful about how they speak to people and how they behave. You know, Lord Chaitanya has given us the instruction, Yare Deka Kare Kaha Krishna Upadesh. Whoever we meet, we should instruct them in the science of Krishna consciousness. Huh? But by the same token, you know, we were running around all day, and I experienced this when I mentioned this the other day, when I first became a devotee, and I decided that I told my brother all about the newfound things that I'd discovered in Krishna consciousness. And then if you didn't chant Hare Krishna, then you were going to go and you'll end up taking birth as a dog or a hog. If you don't surrender to Krishna, then you're going down. So, one of the points that the Keshava Krishna was making was that, you know, when we're out distributing books, say for example, then we can preach to people. Please take a book. This will be good for you and good for everybody. You'll understand the purpose of life by reading one of these books. And we can, in a very short exchange with people, because people know what our intention is in talking to them and presenting Krishna consciousness, they'll accept it or they'll reject it. We won't mind. If they take it, we'll accept that and be encouraged. If they don't take it, then we'll just move on to the next person. Right? And it's a very small exchange. But his point was, basically the message was for the householders. If we were to treat everybody that we've met at work, say for example, in such a way that we preach to them, you know, you've got to surrender to Krishna, then very soon we become the most unpopular person in the establishment. Huh? So speech, it's important how we speak, not only how we speak, how we walk, how we talk, how we present ourselves. So his comment was that in spreading Krishna consciousness, especially in the workplace, it requires a more subtle, gentle art that has to be done in a more intelligent way, basically. It has to be done more intelligently. So that we're, you know, we may be preachers, right? But that doesn't mean we're shoving the Bhagavad Gita down people's throats every time we see them. Right? So in that sense, our preaching is more subtle. Because then people are judging us by our behaviour. They'll be impressed by our understanding of things and our clear consciousness. As Vasudeva said, very clear in consciousness, very clear in his understanding of things. And the devotee is clear, but it's not that we can be always, you know, trying to force people to, but rather the influence, if you like, is more subtle, based on good example. Yad yad acharati sveshtas tat eve dharo janaha. By good example, then others will follow. So the devotees, and it was nice, very nice article, because he was saying that by making people friendly and favourable to Krishna consciousness, then they'll make advancement by appreciating the good qualities of the devotees. You know, preaching in one sense, Prabhupada gives the example, it's like drying out wet grass. Most people, their consciousness is like wet grass. If you get a match and you throw it in the wet grass, what happens? That's it, goes out. If the grass has been dried out sufficiently, right, just like we have bushfires, you know, grass fires, you chuck a match into a paddock in the summertime and the whole thing just goes up. It's a blazing fire very, very quickly. But it takes time. If you try to do that in the winter time, chuck a match into a paddock and expect it just go boom and come up as a big fire, forget it, it won't happen. The match will just go out. So the process of chanting Hare Krishna and distributing prasadam and distributing, doing book distribution and so forth, is that slow, gradual process of drying out the wet grass so that eventually it can be ignited. So especially in our preaching, when we deal with people, we have to be able to discriminate between what's wet and dry grass. And usually you can do that by hearing. Hearing is essential. Beginning of devotional service. Sravanadi, Sudha Chitte. We need to have purified consciousness as a result of our hearing the chanting of Hare Krishna, hearing the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. But we also have to be astute enough to be able to hear the questioning of others. If a person is not interested, then generally speaking, we won't force Krishna consciousness onto them. That's the ninth offence in chanting Hare Krishna, to preach to the faithless. Right? Because we'll just disturb them. That's what happens. We just disturb them. So we have to be very careful in our preaching not to disturb people too much. I was just thinking about last night. When we were on Harinam, the council people came along and started to measure our noise levels. Now that's not happening by accident, I suspect. And we have to be very careful about that. We don't want to get in a fight with the council. It's the last thing we need. But the week before, the police had to come along and move us on because we were just clogging up the footpath. Huh? Well, I was just thinking about it this morning in the shower. I was thinking there's no accident that they're measuring our sound levels. Because they're getting complaints. And just like somebody, one of the brothers noticed, and I noticed that the guy at GNC closed the door on us. Although it wasn't allowed kirtan at that point. That was just, we hadn't even got warmed up yet. But we enjoy, on the whole, very good relations with the people of the city of Melbourne. But this is a little disturbing, a little worrying for me, because, most of the devotees here don't remember the days when the devotees couldn't go on Harinam because they get picked up by the police and thrown in jail. Now, probably not going to get to that, but if they're measuring the noise levels of our kirtan, that means that somebody's complaining. And I was just thinking this morning, we started to do kirtan with the speaker. And we didn't do that before. So we may want to consider only using that when we've got a big crowd of devotees. Just thinking. It's nice to be, I personally like if you don't have to strain your voice. I'm just thinking, if we're upsetting people, and it only takes a couple of envious people who decide, I'm going to get the hurries. And it takes a few people, it doesn't have to be the whole, but it can happen. So we want to be mindful of our Harinam, not disturb it. Because Krishna says, don't disturb the minds of the ignorant, but encourage them in acts of devotion. So preaching is, has to be a little worried, because I don't want to get into a fight with the city council. That's the last thing we could, especially because you know what that means? What that can mean then is they start stopping your book distribution. Right? At the moment we have, unprecedented, we have very good relationships with people, we can do whatever we like pretty much in the city. We can distribute, and it is illegal to distribute books. And, the councils in Australia have the power to stop you from doing kirtan. Well, we don't want them exercising that power. They can if they want. They have a legal right to do it. In Tasmania, we were having some kirtan down in Launceston, and we just walked into the mall, and the police came along. I said, "What are you doing?" I said, "What are you doing? Which are you? What are you doing?" So you can't chant here. Said, "What? What kind of a tin pot down is this? Can't chant." said, sorry, mate. You can try everywhere else, but not here. In this small section of the mosque. I'm like, okay. He said, if you want to get permission, you can go and see the council. So I went to the council. And the councillor said, look, we like you guys. We don't have a problem with you. In fact, we would let you chant, but it's the Christians that people don't like. Because there's this group, a particular group, not all Christians, obviously, a particular group of Christians who basically harass all the residents of Launceston in that mall, shoving the Bible down their throats to the point where everybody got sick of it. They're sick of these guys. And so they stopped any kind of, you know, kirtan. I guess they were singing hymns or something, I don't know. So I was just thinking about that. We need to be very careful with the brothers who are doing the Harinam. I think for, you know, small groups up to a dozen of the there may be no sound system for a while. Because, you know, it's not by accident that they're going to be recording our kirtan, that means they've been doing it before. Right? Well, all of a sudden they suddenly decided, oh yeah, it's a Bible, we'll just record the Haris. Huh? Or maybe it was, but that means they'll do it again. You know, I just can't imagine them, you know, checking this out. Maybe, I mean, perhaps they do it for the buskers. Maybe buskers get too loud. I don't know, but in any case, it's a bit of a worry. So I think when we're doing Harinam, we shouldn't stay in one, we've got to keep moving. Because, you know, probably people in the council have forgotten it, and even most of the devotees don't know. But we have an agreement with the council. Basically, double file, don't stay in one place, keep moving. Right? And don't harass people, basically. The council had a dossier on all of the devotees and of all of the things that each one of them did. So when Balaram and I think Bhagavad Shriya and Kama, you know, they went and negotiated with the council and they said, this guy, here's what he does. He's got to stop it. Just jump out in front of people and try to shove a book in their face. And this fellow bangs the wampus in people's faces. Those movies are radical, you know. Well, see, the move was, you know, we're going to take over the world in 18 days or 18 months or whatever. Everybody's going to be Krishna conscious, so, you know. In fact, you know, there was all the devotees were planning who was going to be the premier of each state. Balaram, you can be the premier of Victoria. You can be the premier of New South Wales. We'll be leading society. Except, you know, the end result of that was they found themselves, you know, kicked out of the city, chased by the police. A lot of that was related to the fact that our book distribution techniques were very, you know, it was very intense. It was the main fundraising that the devotees did. And, you know, after people had seen the Krishna book, you know, on the corner of Swanston and Flinders, on the corner of Swanston and Collins, on the corner of Swanston and Burke. Had been asked for a donation, and then probably on a couple of other intersections in the city as well, they said, we've got to be fried. I've already got that book, and I've already given. I go down on Spencer Street in Flinders. So we have to be mindful of how, you know, how we present Krishna consciousness to people so that they can accept it rather than seeing us as being rude and you know, self-centered. Right? Because it can happen. I know sometimes in the devotees, we get into a huddle and we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're all ecstatic, but we're not mindful of the fact that we just knocked an old lady over on the street. Or that nobody can get past. You know, we're having ecstasy, we're in ecstasy and we're having a great time and midday we're all hurry hurry bowl. And the rest of the people say, well, you guys get out of the way so I can just walk through. So we have to, you know, in one sense we can become a little selfish in that regard. You know, that mentioned on Haridas Thakur, you know, when he was being beaten in 26 marketplaces by the Nawab's men, they were getting in total anxiety because, you know, they were supposed to kill him, but he wasn't dying. And then Haridas Thakur says, "You're in anxiety, how can I help you?" So, you know, we wish that you would die. So, you know, the devotee is concerned about the well-being of everybody, actually. So Haridas Thakur then obligingly, he just lost his, withdrew into internal consciousness, and so they thought he was dead. But, whew, gee, we're out of trouble now. And then there was a debate. What shall we do with him? Where will we bury him? And I said, burying him is too good. Burying is too good for him. We'll throw him in the Ganga. Because one of the reasons why the Muslims were upset is because Haridas Thakur was a Muslim. But he was following the ways of the Hindus, so they were upset. So they're thinking, you know, so he's a Muslim, we should bury him. Burying him is too good. We'll throw him in the Ganga. Yeah, that's what we do, just like the Hindus throw their bodies in the Ganga. Of course, in Haridas Thakur was personally taken out of the Ganga by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. But interesting to note that he was concerned about the fact that his tormentors were in anxiety. Interesting how he was concerned about their well-being. He didn't want them to be punished by the Nawab. Even though he was being punished by the Nawab, he didn't want them to be punished by the Nawab. That's right, they were just acting under the direction of, you know, by Krishna's management, they were acting under the orders of the super soul, or under the inspiration, and he saw it like that. That's in our speech and in our behaviour, we have to be very clear in our consciousness that we're serving Krishna. And why we're serving Krishna, what is the purpose of the creation, how the creation is manifest, and how we can use that creation in Krishna's service nicely, so that everybody gets benefit. Devotees are concerned about the well-being and the benefit of everybody. And very often, in order to do that, we have to demonstrate the behaviour of a Vaishnava in ways that are quite subtle and with a little detachment from the result, looking for the long term, looking for the shreyas, we're looking for the long term benefit, not the prayas, the short term benefit, we're looking for the long term benefit for everybody, including ourselves. Very important. So does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points?
Maybe we should have a Harinam meeting or something.
Harinam meeting. Yes, quite possibly. Yeah, certainly the devotees who go out on Wednesdays.
Is the accordion very bad too? So.
Yep. Yeah, I think we might, you know, just go back to the coal and the karatau. It's great. I mean, who doesn't like a fired up kirtan? We love it. But the guy in GMC didn't like it. And of course, you know, we don't care too much about what they think, in one sense. But when the council guys come around with the, you know, measuring the sound levels, and then, bit of cool off here a little bit.
It might be worth just calling the council and asking them whether it was a random thing.
I thought about that. I'm seriously considering doing that.
Tell you.
Yeah, if they've had complaints.
Yeah.
And then be proactive. And just say, okay, no worries, we'll tone it down because we don't want to upset
people.
Because, you know, when the police came, they just said, you know, you're blocking up the path. So we just Bang, disappeared. Very quickly. Yes, sir, three bags full, sir. Yes, good, that, I had thought of that. And that's how basically the devotees solve the problem by having a bit of two-way communication. And you know, in those days it was war with the city council. There was one guy called, the devotees used to call Lockjaw. And he was a council officer. He knew all the names of all the devotees. You know, the Burnett Street Temple was raided at 4 o'clock in the morning by the police with Lockjaw. And you know, the police would say, "What's your name?" And they say, "Oh, my name's Samsara." Lockjaw would say, "No, it's not." Then, you know, he's got this fine and that fine and another fine. All to do with book distribution and collecting on the streets. You know, Chintaroopa couldn't go on Harinam for a number of years, and other devotees too, because if they went out on Harinam, the police would pick them up, and that's what happened to Corman. Only we knew about it. We knew that Corman was, this is when I first joined up, we knew that Corman was going to get picked up by the police if he went out on Harinam for old fines that hadn't been paid. So we rang up Channel 9, Channel 7, Channel 10, Channel 2, and told them, you know, so we turned it into a publicity stunt. We got a huge amount of publicity out of it, and everybody's thinking, "Oh, look at the council, what a bunch of demons these guys are, picking on the innocent Hare Krishnas." But then they got us back later on because we took advantage of that situation. But then there were still unpaid fines at Cornwall. And Cornwall was, he was, I remember Bhagavata Shriya and Balaram used to look cranky in Cornwall, like, "Oh, God, can do it." Because what Cornwall did was he went into jail and went on a hunger fast, hunger strike. So they got us more in the papers, you know, Hare Krishna priest fasting to death. So Cornwall was psyched up for it. He lost quite a bit of weight, actually. And you know, you couldn't eat the stuff that they gave you in Pentridge. I mean, he ended up in Pentridge of all places, you know. That's not a pleasant experience. But then there were more fines that Corman hadn't paid, and so what they did was, a year or so later, they nabbed him again. And we didn't know about it, and he wasn't prepared, and that shook him around. It shook us up and shook him up, and we couldn't take advantage of it. They got us back. Good point. Yeah, when I get back, I'm going to Los Angeles on Monday, and I won't be back till Wednesday week after that. So, but when I get back, I might. If you can just time things down a little bit on the Harinam, and definitely make sure that we're not taking over all the sidewalk and stuff like, you know, basic etiquette we should. Because, you know, like last month, what did we have? We had about 20 devotees. And half of them, at least half of them, were young North Indian cowboys. Right? Yeah. You know what those guys are like. Spruced up by Ram Kumar. It's not bad, it's good. We appreciate it. But yeah, you know, you get 20 of these North Indian cowboys, they can clog up the whole sidewalk of at one interception, and then people get fried with them. That's why you got to keep them in double, that's the rule, you know, this is the guideline, double line, don't stay outside anybody's place for too long. And upset the customers, basically. But it was fun, I mean, we had a great time last night, it was a great keeper. And I don't want to dampen the enthusiasm of the devotees, but at the same time, I think, you know, you just want to be a little bit careful of of what you're doing. And when I get back, I can have a chat with the council and find out what might be the problem, and then we can resolve it. I suspect that it might be. I hadn't thought about the harmonium, the accordion, but I certainly thought about the sound system. Because we've only had that going for what? A year, maybe?
Not even that long.
Yeah, it doesn't take long to upset people. It's like a cumulative effect.
What we could do is, like, because they have for buskers, they meet the buskers every something morning at City Square, and they measure the sound levels. Like, they bring out their tester.
They do measure.
Yeah, they've got a little tester thing, because, like, they have a limit on what you can. So we could actually test our levels and, you know,
come within the guidelines.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we can explore that as well.
Yeah.
Because I reckon we sometimes go over the.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Way over.
It's not so much a speaker; it's more the whole.
Yes, 25 people yelling at the top of their voice.
If you have like two redundancies, that's already over the sound level. Like, not very loud.
And you guys want to take the djembe out as well.
Oh, that in itself is like well over.
Yeah, djembe by itself is over the speed limit.
Yeah.
Oh, dear me. Storing our fun. We're having fun there for a while. And so everybody else. See, the interesting thing is, we get enthusiastic because there's so many other enthusiastic people out there who are participating in the kirtan. The reason why we jammed up the sidewalk wasn't because we were there, it was because all of the people who were out shopping on a Friday night decided that they liked the kirtan and wanted to participate. Right? That's what fogged everything up. It wasn't us. We're law-abiding citizens.
That's a good point. You gave us four manifestations of sound.
Four manifestations of sound, yes.
One was the force of speech, second was syllables.
Yes.
And third and fourth.
Unmanifest form of sound?
Yes.
And then the elemental sound residing within ether, within space. The elemental, that's what it says here. And Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur explains it in the Saravatra or Darshani. And in the word for word of that verse, it says, Disha, so they're the directions, Kam Ether Shoktaha, Spoktaha Asrayaha, that the element of sound that rests within ether or within space. Then the unmanifest vibration, Nagaha, then Varnaha, the primeval syllable, Omkara, which represents all the other syllables, and then the combination of all the syllables, which is speech. Akritinam Pritak Kritihi. The cause of differentiation, namely manifest languages. So, you know, the combination of all the vowels and the sounds put together, the consonants and the vowels all put together, creates speech, which then conveys meaning. It's very subtle, actually, when you think about it. We pick up meaning very early on when we're babies, practically speaking. We pick up the sounds and the meaning of the sounds just automatically. Yeah, you know, when we hear somebody else speak, like if I hear somebody speaking Telugu or whatever, sometimes when I speak, when people hear me speaking English, they can't understand what I'm saying. I notice that with Indians who have just come from India and they hear an Australian speaking very quickly to somebody else, they don't, it's sort of like, ooh, what is he saying? I want a ploit. Give me a ploit. You've ever had something wrong. Is there something wrong? So no, please, I want a feet. So, you know, when you hear somebody else speaking, I mean, it's very intriguing. One of my friends speaks Chinese, and he was staying in a BBT room in Mayapur next door to me and my wife. We were in the northern room and they were in the BBT room. And they'd have an argument in Chinese. It was far out. We didn't understand what they were saying, but it was pretty amazing to hear it. We told them, we said, well, we'd like to hear you argue more often. Very entertaining. But you know, for a Chinese person, when they pick up the sound and the meaning of the language just by that association. Very interesting how that happens. It's intriguing. And then how Krishna has created the material, the human form in such a way so that we can speak and communicate. And in this case, transmit transcendental or spiritual knowledge through the sound vibration, through hearing it and then giving it to others. It's very potent, actually. Oh, I think we should finish here. Vatrashima Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai.